Keep the faith, guys. We're going to win this.
We will win this, and we, as far as I'm concerned, we already have won.
They may sound confident, but we don't yet know if Joe Biden or Donald Trump won the U.S. presidential election. This is Thursday, the 5th of November, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also ahead, we'll explore how the courts might deal with President Trump's claims if he takes the election there. The COVID outbreak continues to expand. International agencies are trying to help people who experienced the biggest storm to hit land in the history of the world. That and more on today's VOA Asia. Americans are still waiting for the final vote tally in battleground states to determine whether incumbent Republican President Donald Trump will continue to be the country's chief executive for the next 4 years or be replaced by his Democratic challenger, former Vice President Joe Biden. White House correspondent Patsy Wiedekaswera has the latest.
Street parties in Washington, D.C. and in Miami, Florida on Tuesday night as an anxious nation awaits the result of the presidential election between incumbent Donald Trump and Democratic nominee Joe Biden. Neither Trump nor Biden has yet secured the minimum 270 out of 538 electoral votes for victory. U.S. elections are not determined by the popular vote. Jeremy Meyer teaches American politics at George Mason University.
It looks like it's about 50-50 for either of these candidates. And what is extraordinary is it's turning out to be a rerun of the 2016 election. It's going to come down to almost exactly the same three states, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania.
Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania are traditionally Democratic states that Trump won in 2016. Both candidates campaigned heavily there in the final days leading to the vote. In the early hours Wednesday from his hometown in Wilmington, Delaware, Biden urged his supporters to be patient.
Keep the faith, guys. We're going to win this. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Minutes later, Trump responded, saying Democrats are trying to steal the election in a tweet that Twitter labeled misleading. He later spoke from the White House.
It's a very sad moment. To me, this is a very sad moment. And we will win this, and we, as far as I'm concerned, we already have won it.
Despite the president's claim of victory, ballots will continue to be counted, and it could be days before the winner can be determined. Latrice Washington is a professor of political science at Orobayan University.
Because of the pandemic as well, we have seen so many more individuals voting absentee paper ballots. So the demand for that has increased. So that's going to slow it down quite a bit as well.
Americans cast their ballots in relative calm, despite heavier than usual police presence in some polling stations, as law enforcement braced for election violence following a bitter, divisive campaign. With a close vote in several key states and dozens of lawsuits over voting rules that could impact which ballots are counted, the months-long presidential campaign must wait longer for a conclusion. Patsy Wiedekaswera, VOA News at the White House.
Up next on VOA Asia, we talk with VOA's senior executive producer about what lies ahead for the election. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. Heralding a deal with China, the Philippines restarts offshore oil gas exploration in a disputed sea. Hong Kong police arrest a producer who made a documentary about a mob attack on train passengers. Australia joins India, U.S., and Japan in Indian Ocean war games. Garment workers are on the front line of a Sri Lanka coronavirus outbreak. And the Sri Lankan Navy and volunteers rescue at least 100 stranded pilot whales. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. We now welcome Steve Reddish, VOA's senior executive editor. Steve, you have covered many elections. Has there ever been anyone like this?
Nothing like this. Certainly the volume of votes, especially the volume of mail-in ballots, And the divisiveness in the country, it's the 2000 election comes the closest, where, you know, the next day of election day didn't come for more than 30 days. But this takes the cake.
Where do we go from here? Where does this election stand? And for people around the world, especially in Asia, listening to this, what's next?
What's next is really counting all of the votes. There was a tremendous number of mail-in ballots due to the coronavirus pandemic. Mail-in ballots was made easier in many states. And in some of these states, like Pennsylvania and in Michigan and in Wisconsin, they haven't had to handle mail-in ballots in the kind of volume that we saw this year. So basically, what's next is to make sure that all of the ballots are counted in Pennsylvania and Michigan and in Wisconsin, as well as in Nevada and in Arizona and in Georgia. And in North Carolina, all of these states are pretty much still within enough votes to tip the balance one way or another.
President Trump, late last night, early this morning, Wednesday morning, made it clear that he will go to the courts if he doesn't like election results. On what grounds did he say you would do this?
He will likely, and his lawyers will likely, challenge the validity of ballots that come in after Election Day and whether or not states can count them. Many states do have provisions that mail-in ballots, absentee ballots, can come in more than a day or two, or sometimes a week afterwards, depending on the state, because they understand that the mail service is slow, as long as they were postmarked before Election Day. So I think the president will likely challenge many of the absentee ballots on validity grounds.
We have seen a new security fence placed around the White House. We have seen buildings and businesses boarded up in major cities throughout the United States on the possibility of violence breaking out after this election. Have there been any reports of anything like that?
There have been no reports of any major or even minor significant incidents. For the most part, the country was calm and voting all day on Tuesday, and now waits breathlessly for the results in a few key states.
Steve Reddish is the BOA Senior Executive Editor. Steve, thanks so much for doing this. Happening now in Asia, health officials in South Korea have approved a new test that is designed to detect both COVID-19 and seasonal influenza from the same samples. That could help prevent disruption at hospitals as the pandemic stretches into the flu season. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. As you've heard, the presidential election may be headed to a drawn-out legal battle. President Trump has for months threatened to take the results to the courts, and a number of states have already been fighting battles over ballots. VOA's Lori London spoke with University of California Hastings School of Law constitutional law professor Joel Paul. She asked him about the validity of Mr. Trump taking the election to the courts.
There's no significance under our Constitution to election night. Historically, elections were not held on a single day. They were held over a period of months. And the only date that really matters is a Monday, December 14. That's the day on which the electors each vote in separate states. So as long as the states have gotten all of their ballots counted by December 14, that's the relevant date that determines what electors are going to be casting ballots in the election. And as far as the president goes, though the president may not be willing to accept that outcome, it really doesn't matter because the electors' votes will be counted by Congress on January 6, and the new president will be sworn in on January 20, according to the Constitution.
University of California Hastings School of Law constitutional law professor Joel Paul speaking with VOA's Lori London. Democrats and Republicans battled for control of the U.S. Senate in half a dozen closely fought races Wednesday. Brian Wood has more.
U.S. Democrats and Republicans both flipped Senate seats in Tuesday's elections. As of early Wednesday, news outlets reported that Democrat John Hickenlooper won his race in Colorado, while Doug Jones, the most vulnerable incumbent Democrat, lost as expected to Republican challenger Tommy Tuberville in Alabama. In order to take the Senate majority, Democrats need to win four seats, or three if Democratic challenger Joe Biden wins the presidential election. That would give Vice President Kamala Harris a tie-breaking vote. Republicans currently hold a majority of 53 seats in the 100-seat chamber. How it will look after the election may come down to 14 competitive races, including 12 Republican-held seats and two by Democrats. The ultimate makeup of the Senate may not be known for some time. In Georgia, a Republican-held seat is now headed to a January runoff after neither candidate secured a majority. So far, Republican incumbents Lindsey Graham and John Cornyn fended off Democratic challenges in South Carolina and Texas. And, as expected in Kentucky, Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell won re-election. A Democrat victory in the Senate could lead to a new era in U.S. politics if the party holds the House of Representatives and captures the White House.
That's Reuters' Brian Wood reporting.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. With VOA Asia, also follow radio program hosts VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. A Chinese man has been convicted in Florida in a scheme to buy and ship inflatable military boats from the United States to China. He faces up to 15 years in prison. All of the big stories come your way through the day at VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. The number of COVID-19 cases worldwide has surpassed 47 million, with over 1.2 million deaths, according to the latest data tallied by the Johns Hopkins University Coronavirus Resource Center. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo has the latest.
The United States leads the world in the number of COVID-19 cases with about 9.3 million infections, according to the latest figures on Tuesday. Experts warn the problem will get worse if Americans don't do more to contain the virus, especially as the colder weather sets in.
Rates of growth are alarming. They seem to be as bad or worse than they were back in the spring.
A sobering warning as Americans went to the polls on Tuesday, many of whom took the steps to guard against the virus. President Donald Trump has played down the virus, saying for weeks the country is rounding the turn. Rival Joe Biden has criticized the president for his handling of the health crisis. In Utah, Chief Medical Officer Russell Vinick says it's difficult to find qualified staff, even though there's enough protective equipment.
Our big issue is the humans, the people you need. It's not about hospital beds. It's about trained, specialized providers to take care of those patients.
Elsewhere, India and Brazil have the second and third highest number of cases. Russia is fourth with over 18,000 coronavirus daily cases, bringing the national tally to more than 1.6 million. Russia has ordered people to wear face masks in some public places and urged regional authorities to consider an overnight curfew on bars and restaurants.
Of course, I do not want such a lockdown as it was in the spring, because it's closely connected to the economic situation. But putting on a mask at the entrance to a restaurant and immediately taking it off at the table as if the virus would disappear, in my opinion, is also strange.
In Paris, riot police pepper sprayed high school students who blockaded the entrance of their school, demanding that class sizes be cut in half.
Our classes are packed with students sitting side by side. They have tried to rearrange the tables, but it changed nothing because there are still 30 of us in a class.
President Emmanuel Macron ordered France back into lockdown Friday, but left schools open. In Spain, health ministry data showed COVID-19 infections rose to over 55,000 on Monday, the biggest increase in that nation since the start of the pandemic. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Coronavirus questions. Can the virus be spread by mosquito bites? Is there a vaccine or medication that prevents it? Is there any medicine that cures it? The answer to all of the questions is no. The best steps to take: wash your hands, cover your cough, stay at home if you are sick or advised to by local authorities.
Now on VOA Asia, COVID-19 border restrictions will be lifted between Australia's most populous states. Authorities in New South Wales say the border with Victoria will reopen on November 23rd, but warn it will be a calculated risk. Victoria has been at the center of Australia's coronavirus crisis, but strict lockdown measures appear, for now, to have worked. From Sydney, Phil Mercer has more.
4 months ago, New South Wales closed its border with Victoria because of a second wave of coronavirus infections. The closure separated families, disrupted travel and businesses. Victoria was at the epicentre of a national public health crisis. The state capital, Melbourne, was placed for a second time into lockdown, and those strict measures, which have recently been relaxed, have seen the outbreak contained. Victoria has recorded its fifth consecutive day of no new community COVID-19 cases and zero deaths. Its success in curbing the spread of the virus has prompted neighbouring New South Wales to lift border restrictions on November 23, allowing travel between Australia's most populous states. Officials have said it was good riddance to a border closure that COVID-19 forced on us. New South Wales Premier Gladys Berejiklian says it's another step in the reopening of Australia.
New South Wales will be the only jurisdiction in Australia that will be welcoming residents of all states, of all jurisdictions. So New South Wales will be the place where every Australian citizen is welcome, including New Zealand citizens. And that is something I think we can be proud of. But with that, there comes some level of risk, and we accept that. But we believe that it's a cautious risk, it's a calculated risk.
Australia is made up of six states and two main territories. The pandemic has brought fragmentation to the federation established in 1901. COVID-19 was first confirmed in Australia in late January, and since then, authorities have closed various internal borders to curb its spread. Queensland and Western Australia continue to impose border restrictions on other parts of the country, much to the dismay of the Prime Minister Scott Morrison. He said in September that at times it has felt like Australia could break apart. As infection rates fall, those internal tensions between jurisdictions are soothed. Australia has recorded 27,600 coronavirus cases and 907 people have died. More than 8 million COVID-19 tests have been carried out. Internal borders are gradually reopening, but international travel is likely to remain highly restricted into next year. Australia closed its borders to foreign travellers in March, although New Zealanders are allowed into parts of the country. Citizens and permanent residents are also permitted to come home, but face mandatory hotel quarantine when they arrive. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
We continue on VOA Asia. The International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies is appealing for $3.8 million for emergency assistance to an estimated 80,000 Filipinos whose lives have been devastated by Super Typhoon Goni. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
This is the fourth typhoon to hit the Philippines in the past month, and possibly the most devastating. Super Typhoon Goni, which made landfall Monday, has barreled across the Philippines, leaving a massive trail of destruction in its wake. International Red Cross Federation spokesman Matthew Cochran tells VOA the typhoon has destroyed whole villages, damaged or demolished 90% of the homes and buildings.
We are seeing an increasing severity in storms that we believe is very much linked to climate change. You know, as I mentioned earlier, there are reports that typhoon, Super Typhoon Goni, may have been the strongest storm ever to make landfall anywhere in the world.
Cochrane says it is too soon to know how many people may have been killed, injured, and rendered homeless. He says assessments are underway to determine the extent of the damage and the needs. However, what is clear, he says, is people who already are very vulnerable are those who are hardest hit by this catastrophic storm.
So we're talking here about farmers, small landholders, people who are really living on the edge of success and survival, laborers, people who don't own land and exist on the back of their labor, as well as fisher folk, and again, people who are really living on a knife's edge.
Cochrane says these are people whose livelihoods, health, and well-being already had been disrupted by COVID-19. He says the typhoon has left tens of thousands of people bereft and in need of support for a very long time. For now, he says, saving lives is most important. As a consequence, search and rescue missions will go on for as long as feasible. Immediate priority needs, he says, are to provide survivors of this disaster with food, clean water, shelter, medical care, and other essentials. Once the emergency phase is over, he says, the Red Cross is likely to appeal for more international support to fund long-term recovery and rehabilitation programs. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
South Korea's military said on Wednesday it had taken into custody a North Korean man who crossed the heavily fortified border with North Korea into the south, prompting an urgent search operation. Libby Hogan reports.
A North Korean man who crossed the heavily fortified border into South Korea was taken into custody on Wednesday, according to the South military. The man was first spotted crossing the barbed wire fence at around 7:30 p.m. Tuesday night, according to local media, and was then found about 10 a.m. the next morning on the eastern side of the demilitarized zone that divides the Koreas. That's according to the South's Joint Chiefs of Staff, who said in a statement that an investigation is being planned. It comes as South Korea resumed tours to the southern part of the demilitarized zone on Wednesday, after the tours were put on pause in October last year after an outbreak of the deadly African swine fever in the north. However, Unification Minister Lee In-yong made no mention of the North Korean man when celebrating the tour restart. Lee called for restoring relations with the north and a recovery of inter-Korean hotlines that were severed back in June. The two Koreas remain technically at war because the 1950 to 1953 Korean War ended with an armistice rather than a peace treaty.
That was reporter Libby Hogan. Japanese health officials have found 164 emaciated dogs crammed into a tiny house in one of that country's worst cases of animal hoarding. That according to an animal rights activist. Lauren Anthony reports.
That is the sound of 164 emaciated dogs that have been crammed into a tiny house in western Japan. They were discovered by health officials in what activists have called one of the country's worst cases of animal hoarding. The parasite-infested animals were found in a 323-square-foot house in the city of Izumo in mid-October, after neighbours had complained. That's according to Kunihisa Sagami, the head of animal rights group Dobutsu Kiken.
The entire floor was filled with dogs, and all the floor spaces you could see were covered with feces. We will be spaying and neutering the dogs, vaccinating them, and getting rid of the parasites.
The dogs had been packed onto shelves and under tables and chairs. The house was first visited 7 years ago by public health officials after complaints about the noise and a bad smell. But the owner refused to let them in to investigate at the time. Three people live in the house. They say they could not afford to spay and neuter the dogs, so they just kept breeding. Sagami says the family has agreed to give up the animals. His group will be looking for foster homes for them after they receive medical care.
That was Reuters reporter Lauren Anthony. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team. That includes Jim Stevenson, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Please stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.